So let's start with some numbers. The average home mortgage interest rate, 30-year fixed rate loan, last December, 9 months ago, it was 3.35%. Last month, 4.46%. That's a huge jump. It could mean a difference of thousands of dollars for many home buyers, depending on when you buy or where you borrow or how you structure it. Sounds pretty complicated, doesn't it? Well, that's only the beginning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. In the second half of our show today, we'll talk about Kansas City Fashion Week, a creative display of art and business and clothing and jewelry that's here in town next week. But first, it's our Cash Money crew. They're here to talk about most people's largest and most important asset, the home. Buying and selling and financing and planning it, managing it through the years and planning for the golden years. We'll cover that all and we'll take your questions too. In the crew today are David Jackson of Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors. David, welcome to you.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
And Lucas Butchell and Dan Matthews of KHC Wealth Management Services. Welcome to you guys.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good to have you here. They represent all of them, the local Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. Let's start with this. If you're thinking of buying a home, and actually I am, should the fact that interest rates are on the rise change my behavior in any way? Should I be less picky about my home shopping just to get a lower rate? David Jackson?
Well, I wouldn't say be less picky, but I would say that there may be a little bit of an urgency to your decision because interest rates are trending a little bit up. They've come down a little bit just in the last couple of days, but the big overall trend is going to be up, so you want to take advantage of these low rates while you can.
Dan Matthews, how big a difference do interest rates make for a home purchase?
Well, they can make a big difference because the interest rate is an important factor in determining what your payment is, and the more interest you pay, the higher your payment, obviously. So when you're factoring in how much house you can afford, that the higher the interest rate, probably the less house you can afford. So it's very important when understanding how that ties into what your payment will be and really your buying decision.
And Lucas Butchell, maybe we need to even take a step back from that and ask the question, who should be buying a home as opposed to renting a home or sleeping on your parents' couch or something?
It's a great question. I think the decision to buy a home is a big one, and the biggest thing that buying a home does is it reduces your flexibility a little bit. If you're renting and have the ability to move and move cities or change living situations easily, that flexibility is worth something. But so somebody that's at risk to move due to a job change or they might be getting married, I'd think twice about whether it makes sense to buy a home because that's a long-term commitment. Mm-hmm. However, if you're settled and or think you'll be settling here or like the idea of owning a home for kind of personal and emotional reasons, now's a great time to do it.
How long when you say a long-term commitment, how long a term are we talking about? Is there a sort of a rule of thumb about how many years you should plan to stay in a house if you're going to buy one?
I would say at least 5 years mm-hmm. if you're going to be purchasing a home because, as Lucas mentions, it's like it messes up your flexibility. There was this idea that real estate was a no-lose proposition or a no-lose investment. We just kind of found in the past decade that that's not true. So if you move into a home and then 2-3 years from now you find a better job opportunity on the other coast and your company's not going to buy you out, okay, you got to sell that home and you may sell it at a loss. So you really have to think hard and long about it.
But is it right to assume that if you do plan to stay somewhere for a while, you're better off to buy a home than to rent? Is that generally true?
I think so, yeah. I mean, because your monthly payment is going towards the principal, which is in essence becoming a savings account that you can that becomes an asset of yours that you can use down the road if you have to. So yes, I think from a long term perspective, it is a good idea.
And I misspoke a little earlier. Dan Matthews is actually with Stepan Rothwell as financial advisor, so I don't want to get him in trouble or us. So thanks for that. Is there a good guideline? We've talked about the length of time you might want to spend at a home. Is there a good guideline for how long or how much a person should spend based on their income? Can you figure out how big a house is too big a house for you?
And you've got to be careful. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lucas.
Oh, I think that varies greatly for the individual person and what their circumstances are. If you've got if the house is the only debt you're going to have, you probably can do a little bit more. If you've got car payments, student loan payments, other financial commitments that you have, you probably can't afford to have as big of a monthly payment. So yeah. It's a dramatically varying decision.
Can we get more specific, though? Is it possible?
Yeah. Mortgage lenders look at these what's called an affordability ratio, And so when you're talking about just your pure mortgage payment, which would be the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. When I say taxes, I mean real estate taxes are also usually included in your mortgage payment, as well as the homeowner's insurance that you have to carry, or else, you know, a lender's not going to loan you money on a house that is uninsured. So that total payment generally has to be within 25 to 30% of your net monthly income, net meaning after taxes. So, you know, that's kind of the first affordability ratio that you have to consider. The second one is what Lucas talked about, when you add in the car payments, maybe your credit card debt, the other revolving debt you may have, student loans, that's tacked onto it, then your limit there is anywhere from like 33 to 38%. So, you know, that you don't want to be at the top of those limits, obviously, going into this, because then you may be sacrificing your lifestyle.
Yeah, that's one of the big mistakes that I see people make. They'll go to their mortgage broker, and the mortgage broker will say, well, yeah, you can take out a loan for $3,000-$4,000 a month. And, you know, just because they say you can take that out doesn't mean you can afford to. So, right. You know, you have to really, like Lucas said, look at your actual budget and say, okay, what can I really afford? Because just because they're telling you $2,000 a month, you know, maybe you're only comfortable with $1,000 a month, or maybe only $800 a month.
Right. Well, it means you're spending that money on your house payment and not on some other thing
right,
you might
exactly.
want to be doing, like going out to dinner or going on vacation.
Yeah, sacrificing exactly. your lifestyle.
Yeah, having groceries.
Exactly.
Which is sort of what you guys do as financial planners anyway, right? You're
exactly.
helping people decide what's really important to them.
Yeah, and that's we're looking at everything from a comprehensive standpoint and saying, well, you know, if you want to buy this house, that's great, but here's what you may have to sacrifice in order to do that. You know, from a financial planning perspective, I think the ratio is more along the lines of anywhere from 15 to 25%. That's generally what I recommend that clients stick to in terms of how much house they can afford.
Is this a good time to be buying a house, as best you can tell? Is this a time when home values are not going to drop dramatically? Does this seem like a wise investment time for buying a house?
I really think it does. I mean, we came off some pretty significant highs in the housing market in 2006 and 2007, and the real estate market got really poor for a while. They've started to recover now, and you know, the market has changed. There's a lot more buyers out there, and houses are moving more quickly now. So, you know, prices are still seem to be very reasonable. You know, there's no way to predict what housing markets or what housing prices are going to do in the future. But if you look at it from a trend standpoint, it sure feels like a pretty good time to buy.
Is there a different set of questions that you ask if you're buying your first home versus maybe you're trying to move up to a bigger home, or
well,
for that matter, move down?
Well, you know, the big one is on the first home. You generally want to put up 20% as a down payment, you know, to eliminate PMI, or primary mortgage insurance. And the average person does not have that 20% to put down. You know, if you're moving into the next house, you can take the equity from the old house and use that as your down payment. But that first house is like, where do you come up with the money for that down payment? You know, maybe you have to borrow it from grandma or... And that's a huge challenge,
yeah,
especially
for
younger people.
Well, and where do you come up with the money for that down payment?
I disagree a bit. I think with the first home, I think it's okay to extend yourself on that. I mean, you can get a FHA loan. They'll lend up to 97.5% of the appraised value of the home. So that leaves only 2.5% that you have to come to the table with. So for a person who is, you know, maybe in their 20s, doesn't have a lot of income yet, or you know, they haven't really established their career yet, so their income's not up there yet. That's a way for them to get into the home ownership. And those primary mortgage insurance premiums you were talking about, if your income's below $50,000, there's thresholds for single or married, then you can deduct those on your taxes too. So I think if you're young and you can extend yourself, you don't have to come up with 20%. I think it's when you step up, the second home you buy is when you need to have the 20% down.
And go ahead, Lucas.
You did bring up a really good point, though, is what are some good sources for a down payment? Clearly, you know, trying to build up some savings in advance of it makes a lot of sense. But there are some opportunities to do some interfamily loans. If you've got a family member that has some resources and would be willing to gift or loan you some money, you know, that's a nice way to help reduce or eliminate that mortgage insurance piece that David was talking about. You know, and maybe get more favorable terms than you otherwise would from a traditional lender.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're streaming live at KCUR.org. And the Cash Money crew is with us today talking about our most important and valuable asset for many of us, our homes. David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Dan Matthews of Steppen Rothwell, and Lucas Butchell of KHC Wealth Management Services are here. And we'd like you to be here as well. If you have questions about managing, buying, borrowing concerning your home, give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dan Matthews, you were trying to say something.
Yeah, just to add on to where you can find money for a down payment, you can also take out $10,000 out of an IRA and not pay a penalty on that if you're under age 59 and a half to buy your first home. So that can be a regular traditional IRA.
So borrowing against your retirement.
Not borrowing, you're withdrawing the money out and then putting it into your home. So it's like it's just, in essence, moving from one pocket to another. You are sacrificing some of your retirement savings to buy the home, but it's not like the money is just disappearing. It's going into the equity of the house.
Yeah, but I've always learned you need to start saving for retirement, let that money grow and go to work for you. David, do you think that's a good idea?
If that's your only option, you know, that'll be kind of a last resort that I would choose. But because you do have to pay taxes on that money and you are sacrificing, you know, savings for your retirement. But as an option, that is, you know, something that you could take advantage of. The one thing I did want to get to, though, before we get too far, is not always a good idea to buy a house, period. Because when you buy a house, all of a sudden, if the plumbing goes bad or you have electrical problems or whatever, you have to call somebody yourself and you have to pay that bill. And so for some people, paying rent and having somebody else take care of those worries is an advantageous position to be in. So, you know, it's not always just because of the money. The downside of renting is the fact that your rent can go up every year.
And some of that comes down to your own personality and your own skills, whether you want to spend time fixing your house.
Yeah, or even having to worry about it.
Right. I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask it anyway. Is there ever a good time to use an adjustable rate mortgage or something like that that might lower your payment instead of a fixed rate mortgage? Lucas?
You know, there are good times to do that. Right now with mortgage rates at historic lows, I think I'd really caution somebody against that. You've seen in the past people get into a lot of trouble by taking an adjustable rate mortgage to get a lower payment. But ultimately, it moves up, and I think with mortgage rates where they're at now, I think the trend is going to be rising rates there. That being said, if you've got a short time horizon to pay that loan off, so if you're going to be able to aggressively pay that loan down, I think an adjustable rate mortgage can be something that works out really well. Get a lower rate and some flexibility potentially, and if you've got the cash flow to commit to that, it can work out really well.
Yeah, you're saying pay it off before it adjusts, essentially, or if you have like a 10-year adjustable rate mortgage, then you pay that off in the 10 years before it adjusts. Yeah.
Exactly. Good or idea. Get it paid down to a level where even if it adjusts, if it's adjusting on a small balance,
sure.
You know, the change really isn't that much.
A lot of people get into trouble with those when they aren't able to pay it off when the interest rate starts.
Yeah,
to
that's
change.
Actually what kind of created the problem back in 2008, 2009, and before. But one thing that's really popular right now, people are taking advantage of 15-year mortgages as opposed to 30-year mortgage, and you get a lower rate because you're paying it off in 15 years. And because interest rates are so low to begin with, you know, you're looking at, okay, I'll have this house paid off a lot sooner than, you know, ordinarily would have. Building up a lot of equity quicker, too.
And I was going to ask you about that. I mean, when you advise, it's one thing if you're buying your first home and you're in your 20s to talk about a 30-year mortgage. But if you're advising clients who are in their 40s or their 50s who are thinking, do I really want to be making a home payment well into my retirement? I mean, is that someone who should really be thinking about a 15 or 20-year mortgage?
Yeah, we actually look at the 15-year mortgages a lot for folks that are in their 50s or whatever. Are older to pay down that mortgage before retirement, if they have the cash flow to do it. We don't want to, but when you do that, you'll have a higher payment. And so, generally speaking, so as long as you're not having to, you know, dip into investment or retirement in order to make the payment, then that can definitely make sense. And they're willing to sacrifice more of their monthly cash flow towards the house payment because some folks don't want to. Sacrifice their lifestyle just to pay up more, pay their house off sooner.
Right. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Joshua in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard. You're on with the Cash Money crew. Joshua, are you there? Well, it looks like we lost Joshua. I think his question was about what to do if you have bad credit but you still want to be a new homeowner. Are there options out there if maybe getting a loan is going to be a little bit tougher for you, or you're not going to get as desirable a rate? Yeah, go ahead, Lucas.
Yes, there are options that's available, and you can have remarkably low credit scores and still qualify for a mortgage. Generally, what you're going to – the trade-off there is you're not going to get as favorable a term, so you're probably going to be looking at a higher rate and some of those things. And sometimes your options are more limited if you have a lower credit score. So the first thing I'd do is do a little planning before you start kind of getting into the home buying process, 6 months before, ideally, pull your credit report. If there's anything out there that you can clean up or kind of work to build up that credit score, you can save yourself some money by doing a little bit of planning and working through that. If you've got really bad credit, it may limit your options or not allow you to buy a home.
Sure.
If that's the case, I'd put your energy and your money into shoring that up before you commit to a long-term financial purchase.
And Dan Matthews?
Yeah, the score you want to achieve is about 740 if you're looking for a conventional mortgage. If you want to get, the current low rates on those, 740 is the score, and you can go online.
Which is pretty good credit.
Yeah, good credit. So that's what, if you're in this process of thinking, well, do I want to buy a home or not? Well, like Lucas said, start planning, ahead so that you can build up your score.
One more question about home loans. A question from Emily in an email. She says, what do you think about the Kansas City Dream Program? I used it to purchase my first home because the down payment was a major hurdle for me. Does anyone know what that is?
I've heard of it, but I'm not that familiar with it. But I know there are some statewide and local programs out there to help that first-time home buyer, with that initial down payment. And so, if you qualify for those, it makes sense to take advantage of them.
Okay, sorry about that, Emily, that we don't know more about that one. Let's actually move on and say that you already have a home. So we're not talking about buying one now, but I want to talk about some of the key issues from a personal finance standpoint that people should be keeping an eye on as the years go by. We've already talked about interest rates, which suggests that the rates are as low as they're going to be for a while. Does that mean people should be refinancing their houses? What do you think, Dave?
There have been some occasions where I've really strongly recommended people to refinance their homes. I've talked to people that have mortgage rates of 7 or 8%, and I'm telling them, hey, you can switch over to refinance your loan now and maybe get your rate at 4%, which saves them $200-$400 a month on their monthly payments. So if it makes sense, if they've got equity built up, and in some cases, even if they don't have a lot of equity built up, there are programs out there that allow people to still refinance their loan. Because right now, money is very inexpensive. We talk about cheap money. Right now, the Fed has lowered rates to historic lows, which mortgage rates and all have followed. So it's a great time to take advantage of that if you can.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, it's important to understand if you're thinking about refinancing. I mean, generally speaking, if you can drop your rate by 1%, you need to seriously look at that. But refinancing does not reduce the principal amount of your loan. I think people get confused, like, oh, if I refinance, I'll have a lower payment, but that's not reducing what you owe. You may just be paying the loan off over, you may have originally had a 30-year loan, you paid it off for 10 years, now you have 20 years left, and then you refinance back to a 30-year. Well, essentially what you've done now is you're paying your mortgage off over 40 years.
And you're going to end up paying more.
You're going to end up paying more after it's all said and done.
And Lucas?
And the other thing to consider when thinking about a refinance is how long you're going to be in the house and how long you're going to be in that mortgage, because there are costs to refinance a mortgage. Right. You want to be able to reap the benefits of the lower interest rate for a long enough period of time that you actually can kind of make up for those costs.
So when we were talking about home buying, you said 5 years is a good guideline. Is it about the same for refinancing?
It depends on how much you're reducing your rate. But if it's kind of in that 1% rate reduction right now, you're generally talking anywhere between 18 months to 3 years.
Yeah, so to recoup your money.
To recoup your closing costs for the refinance.
Yeah. Now, one thing I do want to bring up before you move on is banks have changed. So when it goes, mm-hmm. when it comes to applying for a loan, back in 2002, 2005, whatever, it was really easy to qualify for a loan. Banks have changed their attitudes dramatically. So when you go to apply for a loan, they're going to scrutinize every single line. So
it used to be they couldn't give you the loan fast enough.
Yeah, they didn't care. It's like, hey, can you breathe? Okay, you get the loan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Nowadays, they're going to ask and want to see documents. So be prepared when you go. And as Dan mentioned, you want to find out what your credit score is in advance, because if your credit score is pretty low, you may be running yourself into a wall. They may just say, no way.
Yeah.
And another important factor is the appraisal. When you're refinancing, they're going to appraise your house. And what you think your house is worth is not what it will appraise for. I can guarantee you that.
Good point.
It's important to
the bank is trying to appraise the value lower.
Well, the bank has to use an independent appraiser to come out and say, well, the value of this home is X. And if it's not high enough, then you may not qualify for the loan because there's certain loan-to-value ratio restrictions that the bank has to follow. So I generally just use, as a starting point, go out and look at the county appraisal, because generally the county appraisal is usually a little low, maybe close, but use that as a guideline when you're starting this process, determining how much do I owe on the house and what is it worth, because that's very important when you're refinancing.
I want to take another call here from Emily in Kansas City, Missouri. Emily, welcome to the program.
Hi.
You had a question, hi. I understand.
Yes. Well, we just this is a great conversation because my husband and I were talking about last night buying our first house, and it's just kind of overwhelming, all the new terms and everything we need to know. So we were wondering if there's, like, good classes we can take or resources out there in the area that will help us.
It's a great question.
Figure this process out.
Yeah, great question, Emily. Is there a resource, a class, a particularly reliable website somewhere that people like Emily can go? Lucas?
The place I would start is your local library. There's a lot of good courses that get put out. It's all local, of course. But I have seen many kind of beginning finance courses and specific things to home buying through your local library system.
Any other suggestions
around
the table, Dave?
It's ways off, but during Money Smart Month, there are so many financial seminars on various topics, and one of them is buying that first home. It's not till April, but that's a great resource because you can go to a seminar and actually ask questions directly free of charge.
And the government has a website called affordablehome.gov, which may have some resources. There are different programs that are out there for folks that they can take advantage of.
Emily, I hope that's helpful, and I'm sure that these guys are holding back on saying you could also consult a financial planner, and they'll be glad to explain it to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're not self-serving here.
Thanks, Emily, for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Before we leave this topic, let me ask about one more aspect of the home buying, home management market, and that's looking into the future. I mean, way into the future, into retirement. Thinking about retirement affects a lot of decisions you make in terms of investing. What are the ways that it should affect your decisions about your home, whether it be the purchasing or the financing? What are the unique issues that are connected with housing for retirement? Go ahead, David.
Oh, I'm sorry. One thing that's really common that I've heard people talk about is they say, okay, when I retire, I've got this big old house, for my three or four kids.
Right.
I don't need this big house anymore. So I'm going to downsize, get a smaller house, and my payments will be a whole lot less anyway. What people are finding, though, when it comes time to downsize, they're going to downsize into something that's fairly modern. So they're really not going to save that much money. So they really have to give that some serious thought. Okay, does it really make sense to get rid of the big house to move into something smaller?
Maybe the house you've already paid off.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you may not be getting that great deal by downsizing into something that's more expensive.
Yeah, and I guess there's other issues too, which is that sometimes you need a house that is more accessible or the bedroom's on the first floor or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Obviously, you may probably need a different style of house maybe than what you had in your working years. I would say it's important, too, to think of your house not as part of your nest egg. Dave and I were talking about this before the show. I think a lot of Americans get in trouble because they do put so much value in their home, and they think, well, I always have my home. But a home really shouldn't be your source, and it's very hard for it to be a source of income in retirement. So you don't want to put yourself in a situation where you have to force yourself to sell your home in retirement just to make it work. So that you can live in retirement. So when you're planning for these things during your working years, don't think of your home as part of your nest egg. That should be, 401k savings, IRAs, all that should be part of the nest egg and not the home.
Are there estate planning issues that you want to think about with regard to your home?
I think the one that most people commonly think about is what's going to happen to my home when I pass away? Who's going to get it? Is it going to be sold? Is it going to go to the kids? So that's one. Titling your home properly to be in conjunction with your estate planning documents is important. So when you're going through the refinancing process or just the home buying process, make sure you check on the titling to make sure that's done properly.
Very good. Well, we've talked about buying a house, managing the house you have, and planning for retirement and your house. So I hope this has been a helpful introduction to the conversation, at least. David Jackson of Waddell & Reed, Lucas Butchell of KHC Wealth Management, and Dan Matthews of Step & Rothwell. Thanks to all three of you for being with us today.
Hey, thank you. Enjoyed it.
We'll have the Cash Money crew back again soon. When we come back, we get a sneak peek of Kansas City Fashion Week. Yes, maybe it's not Rome or Milan, but don't be fooled. The art and business of fashion are very much alive here. We'll talk about the event coming up and meet two of the designers whose work will be on display. That's when we come back. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.